Hey there, I'm Tal Zlotnitsky from Ignite IT Consulting. You know me from the Braving Business podcast, but when I'm not behind the mic, I'm helping tech startups and established companies ignite their full potential. I also help entrepreneurs and businesses in distress reset for success. With over three decades of entrepreneurial success, I bring hands-on experience to drive growth, navigate turnarounds, raise capital, and lead through innovation. Whether it's executive coaching or strategic transformation, I'm here to turn your business challenges into success stories. Visit igniteitconsulting.com and let's spark that change together. That's igniteitconsulting.com. Your journey to business brilliance starts now.
And one last quick thing. If you enjoyed this episode, please stay on after the show to learn more about the Braving Business podcast and other great episodes for you to discover. And now, let's get the show started. Well, hello there.
Hello there, Mr. Orange. Why are you so orange today?
Well, because I'm trying to be
on brand. Not your face, just your shirt. Your hat's got a little orange. You've got the orange in the logo.
I'm trying to be on brand, man. That's all. I'm just representing.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, plus I'm
I meant to ask you, how was Vegas? We PJ and I just Adam's our guest today. We'll talk about him to talk to him and about him in a second. But PJ was just a host at on behalf of the Braving Business podcast at a major event in Vegas.
It was.
Millions of viewers, thousands of guests.
It was very cool. It was very, very cool. I don't think I'm a star, so that unfortunately didn't happen. But it was very cool. Got to meet a bunch of new entrepreneurs, people that have some very interesting and very cool inventions and whatnot. And I got to judge some people to find out if they can get to the final stage to present as they did in front of Damon John from Shark Tank and a bunch of other celebrity people. And it was really kind of fun. I passed out a bunch of hats. People had a bunch of swag. Yeah, it was good.
Nice.
It was hot.
You know, it's more exciting than my weekend. I went to a 2-year-old and an 8-year-old, well, 9-year-old actually. So my granddaughters turned 9 and 2. This weekend, and my daughter threw a party. Daughter and her husband threw a party, and so that was my weekend. It was a hell of a lot less exciting than yours. How about you, Adam? How was your weekend? Anything exciting?
My weekend was awesome. Did a fundraiser golf outing on Saturday with friends I haven't seen for over about 20 years, and yesterday we had parents and in-laws over for dinner. So nice and low key, but good.
Over 20 years. How were you? Were you 6 years old when you made these friends or something?
Nice try. Well, yeah, they were seniors when I was freshman. So got the 20-year number I'm actually pretty close on.
Wow.
Yeah.
PJ, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say it's every time I see you, it's hard to imagine you with grandkids, especially a 9-year-old. And even though it might not have been as exciting as Vegas can be, I'm sure for those little girls, they had the best time of their life because you were there.
Mainly because my ex-wife was there and she's the best grandmother in the world and she bought much cooler gifts than I did, but hey, that's okay.
There's always next year, buddy.
There is indeed.
So let's introduce Adam. Right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, our guest today, folks, is Adam Kroner, an award-winning entrepreneur and Army veteran. Thank you for your service, sir. And co-founder of Carbless, the fastest growing privately owned low carb beverage company in the US. So I'm taking it's not beer. Adam launched SN Food and Beverage LLC in 2018, along with his wife Amanda, naming the company in honor of a very close friend who tragically passed away in an accident. Under his leadership, Carbless has sold millions of cases in 11 states and online worldwide. Earlier this year, Carbless was awarded the number one fastest growing company by Inc. Regionals Midwest. Adam's journey has been marked by perseverance, overcoming numerous challenges to scale Carbless from a small family-owned business to a rapidly growing national brand. His story will sound familiar to anyone who listens to this podcast, and frankly, to anyone who's ever attempted to build something substantial. It required having a vision, overcoming initial skepticism and market resistance, but also refusing to quit. Excuse me, I'm going to get this out of here one of these times. Beyond that business, Adam is committed to balancing family life and staying true to his values. And as I mentioned, Adam is a veteran of the U.S. Army who is a staunch advocate for veterans and troubled youth, dedicating himself to bridging gaps and creating new opportunities for those in need. Adam's passions extend beyond his business success. He told us in pre-interview that his goal was to show others that resilience, service, and the ability to create opportunities from setbacks are the keys to lasting growth in business and in life. Adam, thank you so much for joining us on the Braving Business Podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
It's good to have you here, Adam. And, actually a quick question, because actually I'm noticing we had two names for your wife, and I'm sure maybe she has both names, but is it Amanda or is it Kaylee? Because I had both.
Amanda is my wife and Haley is my oldest daughter.
Got it. All right. Well, that makes a lot more sense. I think in my notes, I had that mixed up. I just want to make sure that PJ didn't share with your wife that you had a second wife by a different name other than the one that she
all of a sudden
recognized herself by. That would have made this a much more interesting episode of the Braving Business Podcast than any we've ever had. But I'm glad to hear that isn't the case. Adam, thanks for joining us. You had a really interesting journey. A lot of the guests we have on likewise have interesting journeys, but yours started very, very differently. You were a dad very, very young. You were a soldier. And that was long before you started this business, which you've been running just for about six, 7 years. So relatively young business. Tell us about your early days. What kind of a person were you? And you know, what shifted for you to change the trajectory of your life?
Oh, that's a lot of things. Early days, like as a kid, I would say I was the person I intentionally outcast myself because I didn't want to be like everybody else. Always had kind of entrepreneurial desires, but I saw people close to me get made fun of. So as I grew older, I started making fun of the people who made fun of everybody else. Realized that wasn't great either. But I mean, I think that the few things that kind of changed me was having my daughter. So in April of my junior year, I decided to go split op, which means I did training my junior year to go into the Army. And then came back, did senior year, and then senior year had my daughter. I went to finish my training after senior year, and then about 10 months after that was sent to Iraq for a year. And so I was, for lack of better words, a complete piece of shit prior to the age of 17. Got into a lot of things that probably should have ended my life prematurely. And I mean, the catalyst of having the kid and then, you know, being sent overseas at 19 years old and having to figure yourself out real quick. Those two compounding things changed my trajectory quite a bit. And I would say then further refined by focusing on leadership and self-development. I kind of viewed leadership as yelling at first and then moved into, I read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and found out that yelling gets me a win for about 20 minutes. And you know, really learning leadership can get you a win for 20 years. Mm.
Very cool.
It's interesting you learned that at that age, because I also learned that. It took me a very long time to get to a place where I realized that true leadership was not about being the loudest and the most aggressive, but about the most inspiring and the most accessible. And that's a lesson that a lot of entrepreneurs never learn. So I hope that people who listen to this podcast, particularly people that have listened to it over and over again, are absorbing that lesson, because it is. There are a handful of lessons that are consistently coming out of most of our episodes, and I think that's one of them. Leading from your best self as opposed to leading from your jerk self is a darn good way to be more successful in business and in life. So thanks for calling that out so early in the episode. I appreciate that.
Oh, that's awesome. So let me ask you a question then. So you started Carbless with your wife, Amanda. What was the initial spark that made you believe that you could come on top in such a competitive market?
I would say the weird thing is, I always tell people that in order to do this, it obviously takes a little bit of ego and arrogance to think that you can even compete. But coming out on top really wasn't the beginning. It's always been, I'm a firm believer that, you know, if I told you to eat an elephant, you wouldn't try to put that thing down in a gulp. You'd figure out how to eat it bite by bite. And so it really started as like, we should put this in a can. And then, so how do we do that? Well, we need a big formula and we need a plan. And then once it's on the shelf, let's try to get more SKUs on the shelf. Let's try to get in more stores. Let's try to increase velocity. So the I would say the cool part is how quickly we've come out on top against, you know, people that have been business 100, 150 years. But it was obviously the belief had to be there, but it was more about really just getting a product that we thought deserved to be in the market for the consumer. That was, that's what it started as.
And yeah. It's, and I'd love to know how you fit an elephant in a can. That's amazing. But let's talk about, I mean, I want to jump on what you just said, because I know that, you know, part of what made Carbliss successful is that it was informed by your own lifestyle, and you had a sense that there was a gap there in the marketplace that you knew resonated with you, and you believed resonated with other people. So I have a two-part question. First, how important is it, do you think, for entrepreneurs to solve problems that resonate personally for them, that it's not just a business opportunity, but hopefully a passion? And second, how did you identify this market gap?
Let me answer those in reverse, please. How did we identify it? So we were doing keto, low carb, low sugar. I was drinking vodka water, lemon lime, super boring. Seltzers came out in 2018, tried them, and then thought they were horrible, but tried them because they were low carb, low sugar. In summary, I didn't like them because I thought there were a ton of carbonation, not much flavor. But based on the can, I thought they'd be very flavorful. So I started making a vodka lemonade that had no carbs and sugar. And when we look at why did we, you know, really find a gap, is I thought it was just me. Then everybody loved it. I bought $500 worth of low carb, low sugar stuff and found out that they all tasted the same. Ton of carbonation, really no flavor. And they're super popular. So then I started asking people, why are you drinking them? And the answer they would give me is it's low carb, it's low sugar, it's low calorie. Imagine being a chef and being told that's why somebody's eating your food. Like, you'd be pissed. Yeah. And so I would follow up with, like, do you like the taste? And now this is at the boom of the seltzers, and everyone was like, nah, it's okay. So they were only drinking it because of the nutrition panel. Now imagine I could give you a vodka lemonade or a vodka cranberry that has that nutrition panel and the flavor of a vodka cranberry. Most people were like, yeah, I would much rather drink that. So the gap was really thinking we were just fitting something that we liked, and then I guess validating by about 300 questions. I didn't go to business school. I know for a fact that asking 300 people and not sampling them is a horrible go-to-market strategy, but that's what happened. As far as do they need to resonate personally, I absolutely think so, because to this day, I still spend probably 50% of my time going into the market and selling to bars and restaurants and introducing it to consumers. And that passion bleeds through the entire team. Because I'm just a firm believer that, like, I've probably heard 1,000 times, oh my God, this is what I thought they should have been, the seltzers, right? And to continue to get such positive feedback, like, compounds on what I'm doing. So I think that passion helps ring through when somebody is solving either their problem or maybe something that's, you know, sentimental enough for them that it was, you know, a family member or whatever, depending on the market.
Yeah. And, you know, Tal and I have been lucky enough to talk to a bunch of very innovative, you know, market movers in their industries. And I think that, you know, aligning personal beliefs with, you know, you mentioned that you got to have a little bit of ego. I think it's a little bit of just really being confident in what you're bringing to the market. And it sounds like, you know, you've done your research, you've gone out and you've taken a look at what's out there in the market and how your flavor profile competes against others. But really, at the base of it, what we hear a lot of are people who just sit there and see an opportunity and they're like, yeah, I can do that better, or I could do that. You know, and I think that's a great mentality to have when launching a product, because, you know, you already have that instilled confidence to step forward, and obviously it's worked out well for you.
And let me piggyback on that, because I think, PJ, you're teasing out something really, really valuable. And I really appreciate, Adam, that you're not, you know, that it's very clear how authentic you are, because you're not talking about, oh, we, you know, our market research was second to none. We, you know, we statistically, you are talking in a very candid way about the fact that you talked to 300 people in a non-scientific survey and you got the best information you could, and then you believed in something and you acted on it. And I think a lot of people that listen to this podcast are going to be, if they're starting a business or they're thinking about starting a business, they're also going to need to lean into gut and whatever available market research they can do. I encourage people to do some market research. Try to come out of your own immediate circle of friends and family, because they might tell you what they think you want to hear. But you don't have to have scientific market research to establish a good sense of whether what you're talking about has a chance. And I think, sure, if you can afford to go out there, and I've had businesses where I was fortunate enough to raise some capital and we did market research and spent tens of thousands of dollars. It didn't guarantee a success, by the way. In fact, the business where I spent the most amount of money on market research was one of the few businesses I've run that failed. So it's really interesting to me that you share that. And I think it's super helpful that you did. So thanks.
It's a fine line, isn't it, Tal? And Adam, I guess, both of you can answer this, but it's kind of a fine line because you want to be prepared as much as you can for what you're about to launch. But then there's also analysis paralysis, and you can look at spreadsheets and market data all the week long, but it's not going to get you any kind of product in your customer's hand, So it is a fine line, and I think it's great that entrepreneurs are willing to cross it.
Yeah. I think, an interesting piece that I think about often is, data, right, is only as good as the questions that are being asked, which is, true of anything. And so when you think about market, if you were to say, Adam, I'd love to have Carbless as it is, but I want it to be organic. I want it to be made with unicorn tears, and I want it to be fully sustainable, and every drop, nothing touched the rainforest. You get where I'm going, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure if you read the data, it would tell you that the consumer wants that by far and wide. They would love that. And then the next step is, well, right now you get a 4-pack for $10.99, but if we did all those things, the 4-pack would be $49.99. And really correlating what does the consumer think they want versus what are they willing to pay for? And that correlation is a very, very hard, hard cross section, I think, when you're starting a business, because you think you have a lot of those things figured out. But truth is only once it's on the shelf and does it turn. And that's a pretty hard thing to bet on.
Wow. So you had mentioned that, there's an importance to staying true to your values, which I think both Tal and I agree with wholeheartedly. And people talk a lot about their values, but they don't always live them, unfortunately. Can you talk about how you've been able to maintain your integrity and purpose, especially as this little baby dream of yours has continued to scale and grow?
So I think part of that goes back to many, many years ago when I was working at the Cheese Factory and started getting promoted. I wanted to get promoted because I'd make more money. And I hit a breaking point where I left where I was at, and I came back a year later, and they created a job for me. And it was in a continuous improvement role. And I immediately got to see how my work got to positively impact a bunch of people. And then I went into a leadership role within that plant, and I got to see, now as I get escalated throughout the business, I get to impact more people positively as long as I'm doing good work, right? And that shift, even before I had my own business, went away from money. And so now from, I would say, the core of the business, obviously the financials have to be there. Otherwise, if the business goes under, none of it matters. But we're always leading from a place of, how do we be a great supplier? How do we be a great employer? How do I make somebody feel emotional about their employment, which happens often and we're super thankful for? How do I make my distributors more money? How do I make my retailers more money? Because at the end of the day, that's why business exists. If I can do that and be a good human and be part of the community, I'm a firm believer it's selfish because that makes my business grow, but I'm a firm believer it makes it really, really hard to take us down.
Yeah, and I it resonates with me, and I think it was a great follow-up question, PJ, in light of where Adam had just taken us, which is that, oftentimes when you come into the marketplace, especially if you do some market research, you may find, as Adam said, the consumer is looking for completely unrealistic things. And it's very hard as an entrepreneur to maybe tell the marketplace that, you're asking for why. I'm going to give you maybe why light or some version of why that is frankly achievable and affordable. And it could feel like maybe you're
not holding true to your values. But the key really is to make sure that you understand what your real values are. What are your core values, right? So Adam, I don't know where you stand on, environmentalism. It's fine if that's a major passion of yours. If it isn't, that's also okay. But bottom line is you have certain passions, right? There are certain things that animate you more than others. I feel like I've heard some of what they are, but if you could, put words to that, what would be the top two or three values that really animate you, both as an entrepreneur and as a human being?
I think they're all pretty much the same, to be honest. I've learned over years that for a long, long time, I thought, money was the thing I wanted. And I definitely associate with all these things that talk about it's not money, it's freedom. I wake up every day and I fucking love my life. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people who say that who don't actually believe it, who they're trying to get there. And I would say ultimately from, passion, integrity, values, my goal is to be able to create that for anybody else. And when you look at one of the things I've learned for myself is the people that I help, I used to help everybody to the detriment of myself. And so now I've had to put some precursors in of helping people who have at least the ability to start making immediate change. And it's all built on the fact that I just, from the core of me, love my life. And I don't believe as many people that would say that outwardly actually do. And from a mindset, personal growth, financial growth, whatever, I'm here to help them get there. I can't even put words to what it means to me.
So let me ask you, that's, first of all, congratulations. That's amazing. Yeah. And I agree with you that it's most people probably live their lives and have moments that they love, but they don't necessarily love their lives or love what they do for a living. So I think it's a great, it's a beautiful thing. And one of the reasons I think entrepreneurialism is so important and creates such opportunity because it gives you the opportunity to do and live the things you care to live. And experience things that perhaps aren't available to people who are working 9 to 5s and working for other people. What do you think, share what feels appropriate, but what is it about your life that you love so much? And what lessons are there, do you think, for our audience, something that they could take, not just the fact that do something you love. I think people hear that. Sometimes you're not in a position to necessarily act on that. What else? What is it that makes your life a life that you love living?
I will back up and say that a lot of it's been mindset training on my personal part. And so the mindset training was probably the catalyst. And now I get to build. I do want to go back, and you had mentioned, sometimes you don't have the ability to because you're working for other people. I had a conversation with my dad many years ago that made me realize that not everybody wants to be the entrepreneur, not everybody wants to be the supervisor. And so part of that, with that being my goal, is I have to accept the fact that I love the entrepreneur, the freedom, but I need to have people working for me. And that is, that's an employee. So how do I integrate that freedom and happiness for my team to try to help get the mindset there? And it sounds really shitty, but if you've ever worked in corporate, you'll know exactly what I'm saying. Part of the way that we instill that is we do that by treating people like adults. And that sounds so damn trivial, but give you an example. You have 3 weeks of vacation. It's November, and you need 2 days off because either A, you're going bonkers, your kid's sick. I really don't care how many days you already took off. If you're getting your stuff done, you need a day off, you take it, because that's treating another person like a decent human being and not saying no because some spreadsheet says you've already had enough. I might have derailed on that question a little bit, sir.
No, I think that's an amazing, I actually think a lot of what I'm hearing, from you, it's PJ's question, so I'm going to defer in a second, but I love that you touch on self-awareness. I think that's something I talk about often on this podcast. I think what separates me at this point in my life from me 20 years ago is not my level of success. It's my level of self-awareness. And I think that that's a great thing for you. And you're still a man in your 30s for you to have reached that level this early. That's uncommon.
PJ. Well, he looks like a man in his 20s. What I wanted to say, though, is that...
Such a sweetheart.
He is.
I call myself that all the time. One of the things that I think is really interesting is, you know, Ty, you really did, and both of you obviously touched on self-awareness, but I think the word that Adam used that really got me was the mindset, right? Like, how do you... If you wouldn't mind, I would love to dig a little bit into that about how you trained yourself. I know you have a military background, which I'm sure has attenuated that a little bit. But how does an entrepreneur get the right mindset to tackle the things that you know are coming? You don't know what they are, but you know things are coming. How did you do it, and what would you advise for others?
Oh, this is actually one of my favorite exercises to do with people. I won't do the exercise to you, but I learned this in 2017. And this exercise, as soon as I started incorporating it into everything, just catapulted. We shared earlier, my business was named after a friend of mine that passed. Part of that is I always had these ideas. His death in 2016 really, like, can you, you know, take your own medicine type thing, Adam? But it all boils down to this. There was an exercise done with Dale Carnegie that was the first principle is don't criticize, condemn, or complain. And said another way to understand. So rather than chastising a business, a person for what they're doing, be genuinely curious as to why are they doing that, right? And it comes from a completely different place when you have a conversation with an employee, whatever. So The premise was, we did this exercise where you write down three things you want to complain about. And the three things I did was, this first exercise was Wisconsin weather, because it sucks in the winter. I mean, you're from Chicago, PJ, you get it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then there's, I had a car that had a supercharger that was under warranty. So I didn't get to drive my car. That was one of the things I complained about. And I think the third one was my now wife and I put in an offer on a house and we didn't get it. So then the next part of that exercise is, first you stand up and you say to everybody what your three things you want to complain about. Then you sit down. Then you write down at the bottom, and it really doesn't matter. And then we all stand up and I say to you, you know, the weather in Wisconsin sucks, and it really doesn't matter. And so after that, everybody sits down and the guy says, you know, how many of you had things that matter? And you got about probably 70% of the people raise their hands. I didn't, like I said, weather, supercharger, whatever. But, you know, we had people that my grandma's about to die. We put my dog down yesterday. That matters, right? And so when you start to frame, now my buddy passed away. If that was on my list that I wanted to complain about, that matters, right? That's a big deal. Doesn't matter who you are. The reframing of the next piece is what has helped me tremendously. There are only two things you can ever do. And if you can truly mentally put it in these two buckets, you will win. Number one, physically change the situation. What if I said, my job really sucks? Well, get a new fucking job, right? And I'll walk you through a really fun one that we did because I think it'll hit home for a lot of people. Now, I'll use my friend passing away. He died. I am not God. I'm not a doctor. I can't bring him back to life, right? So option one is clearly off the table. The other option, change your perception towards the situation. So do I want to go down the path of victim mentality and, oh my God, he's dead because he wanted to ride a motorcycle with Adam and he died on a motorcycle. He wasn't wearing a helmet. And, you know, I tried telling him to wear a helmet and go down this guilt path. Where does that lead me? In a pretty crappy spot. Instead, he's gone. I can't change that. Why don't I just focus on how awesome of a fucking human being he was? Excuse my French. We probably should have. I have a sailor mouth. Let's focus on that. Let's focus on when he walked into a room, how he lit people up. How did he positively impact my life? Why is my life better? How do I take those things and focus on how to make other people's lives better? Part of the reason his name, we used his initials to name the business, was it's on the back of every can. So whether anybody knows the story, I'm like mentally and emotionally spreading, call it his love, his joy throughout the nation by each individual person who picks it up. It means nothing to most people, but it's a way that I can positively look at his life. I'm going to go back now and talk about the thing I think most people fail to do. And this is how succinct and easy it is.
We were doing a training for third shifters, and my stepdad at the time was the third shift supervisor. And so I always like to say he was the queen of complaining that he didn't get any sleep because their shift was 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. So in his group, 90% of people, one of the problems they had was sleep. Okay. So I'm the director over the area, and I'm way in the back of the room, and I'm going through this with every single shift. And this is the last shift. And the guy goes, okay, who had something that matters? 90% of these people raise their hand. One person goes, yep, I work third shift. I don't get enough sleep. Everybody now chimes in, right? We've got the echo chamber we probably didn't think we wanted. And so the guy running it goes, huh, why don't you get a different job? And then somebody chimes in and they go, well, first it started with, now I messed it up, but why don't you go to a different shift? And it was, well, I can't go to first shift because there's a really long waiting list, and I don't want to go to second shift because then I would never see my family. And so he's like, oh, so sleep doesn't really matter. Your family matters, right? And so let's take that a step further. So if you can't go to second shift, you don't want to go to second shift, you can't go to first shift, why don't you just get a different job, right? And then everybody starts chiming in. Well, I wouldn't make enough money because this place pays really well. So now what I hear you telling me is you wanted to complain about working third shift and not getting sleep. You're in control of where you work. You're in control of the shift in one third of it. So what I hear you telling me is sleep really doesn't matter. Your family matters and your pay matters. And that little exercise with that group, because working in a manufacturing environment of 1,000 people, and mind you, everybody's staring at me going, oh my God, how is he going to reply? And I'm like, answer him. If you're going to sit here and gripe about not sleeping, you have options. And it really helped diminish every complaint I had when you start walking through, what am I not doing about it that I could be?
Man, that was a bit of a masterclass. And I want to thank you for it. And I want to share a little something that hangs over my desk. And I don't know how well you guys will be able to see it. It says, noteworthy CEOs are calm, resilient, inspiring, persistent, logical, agile, and passionate. But the reality is those are just letters to remind me of something. They don't actually mean anything. What they stand for is N is for nagging, which these are the things winners avoid. Winners don't nag. Winners don't criticize. Winners don't argue. Winners don't complain. Winners don't seek reassurance. Winners don't interrogate. Winners don't talk about problems too much. Winners avoid long explanations. Winners don't apologize too much, and winners don't promise things that they cannot guarantee. And underneath it, it says, instead of complaining, learn to say what I do like. Instead of talking about problems, change how I respond and treat the situation. Have a plan for the things I fear, and don't ask for things. Act and inspire. And what I just heard you say is a version of that. And ultimately, I learned this the hard way. Because I, like most people, didn't really realize how much complaining we do. Mm. And the impact it has on our environment. Now, that could be true in your relationships. If you come home from work and you're talking about your asshole boss or this person who did that or the person that cut you off, it's exhausting. Okay. All you're going to do is exhaust people by complaining. My rule of complaining is pretty straightforward. If you're going to complain about something, you have two options: do something about it or explain why it doesn't matter. And it sounds an awful lot like what you just said, Adam. And I think that's a great words to live by. So, you know, it's amazing how often in this podcast I run into people who are so aware of how to be. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Adam is successful. Hearing you speak, your success is a product of preparation and mindset. And successful people, preparation, mindset, and then there's one more thing, which we're going to talk about next, which is starting a business, launching it, becoming successful is not a straight shot to success. There are often moments of struggle and failure. And I'd love for you to talk about that. What were some really big obstacles you encountered in the early days of your business? Was there a moment where you thought, shit, this might not work? And how do you talk yourself through that?
Yeah, I'm just making notes.
Yeah, that's fine. Adam, by the way, just for those of you that are not watching on YouTube, what I'm noticing Adam do, which is a very, very good idea in general, when you're talking to people, particularly important business calls. This isn't one of them, but Adam's doing it, which is very respectful. He writes down our questions. He wants to make sure that he addresses our questions. And that's a really, really good habit for those of you listening who are starting businesses or early in your careers. It's a fabulous idea to make sure that you remember what's being asked of you.
Well, also he might be writing down things that he wants to talk about, right? So just keeping organized like that is, I was actually noticing that, and I wanted to say something about it too, is that, you know, it is again, a masterclass in how you can help yourself be present in times when your presence is needed. And so you're in this conversation, you are dropping knowledge bombs like not many people have on this show. And I think that it's just an example of how you are going about it and how other people can be prepared. So kudos to you, sir. So please, I'm sorry, go ahead and answer Tal's question.
Yeah, well, thank you for the kind words. And it is most definitely a reminder. Part of it helps me also frame it up and start thinking through when I write it. So struggles, you know, the whole you got to spend money to make money didn't really hit home until I started this business. Had a failed business in 2014. But this was unlike any other because I did an ROI of how much do I need to sell to like make my money back. But then you need to put in a PO and you need to dump more money in. And it can be a scary cycle that gets out of control. So the two struggles were literally that, well, in the first year we got hit in the, you know what, about three times. So I was in the manufacturing world. I assumed everybody operated at the level that we did. I worked for, you know, billion plus company and then a little smaller one. But our first manufacturer, after about 3 months of being on the shelf, 75% of our product was leaking. Right. Don't remember the number at leaking, but we had to pay back 75% of our revenue. So if you can take a guess at, you know, 18 to 20% gross margin right out of the gate and then paying back 75% of my revenue, holy crap, were we upside down? And it was because everything was leaking. That guy to this day still says it was the liquid in our can. We've made, you know, almost 100 million of them since and no more problems. So I think we know where the problem lied there. Went to another manufacturer in Idaho. Didn't make any sense. We were making about $10 gross profit at the time. It actually took me $10 to get it back to Wisconsin. So as soon as it got here, I was losing money. And so we put our PO in March of 2020. Really fun year for everybody. And then that gets made. And then it was 30 days is what they said we had for lead time. So towards the end of May, I put in a PO to be made at the end of June, so we'd have it for July. Well, they had bought a machine from China. There was a $10 gasket when you switch from standard can to sleek can that had broken in their last changeover. And that $10 gasket took them 4 months to get. So we had zero revenue for this money bleeding machine from basically July until October. And then we were going to launch a cranberry in May. We switched all the marketing to be a Thanksgiving focus, launched our cranberry in November. And at the same time, I did all the design. So I designed the case upside down, which was more just a visual fupa. But I mean, in that first year, we went from paying back 75% of our revenue. Again, any bit of financial sense, and you'll know that that's a recipe for disaster. Then no revenue for 4 months after that, a few months later. And then we got an angel investor about 4 months later. And that man, similar to my notes earlier about, you know, integrity and stuff, but I hope to be who that man was for us, for as many people in the future, because he's just been an amazing human being that helped us scale our business. And up until then, I worked full time just to fund the losses of the business outside of what we put in. That was really the catalyst to get the company moving. We launched on store shelves in 2019. I didn't quit my job until May of 2021. We started hiring that same day, and we've been on a trajectory ever since because I've been able to focus on it.
So in those moments of struggle, and it sounds like it wasn't a minute, it was some significant amount of time, how close were you to giving up? I mean, was quitting a consideration?
Thank you. Wrote that down, didn't answer the question. The interesting piece is the hardest part was mentally was right before we launched. There's something called a statement of composition to get approved. And the guy who was helping us said it would take 1 month and it took like 5 months. And I was starting to go, you know, the signs of the world are saying, Adam, don't do this. Don't do this. But I would say between my wife and I, who I have a great deal of trust and would have this conversation, neither of us, it honestly never crossed our mind, which I think sounds very strange, but it's always been, what's the methodical biting the elephant one piece at a time? What's the methodical next step to get through this? Quitting the label thing was the biggest mental challenge, and some of the financial ones with, you know, leakers and stuff. But I mean, never been a moment of saying we're going to quit. As soon as we said we're going to put this in a can, it's just been growing and expanding on that ever since.
That's awesome. I mean, there really is. Because I think a lot of people would have a little moment of pause, right? To be like, holy crap, are we doing the right thing? Are we crazy or whatnot? But kudos to you and Amanda, because a lot of people, especially when there's two people who are side by side in it, you know, as awesome as that is from a partnership standpoint to build something together, it also allows two different opinions to come in. And if one of the opinions is like, we got to cut bait, like this is not working, obviously that can be the demise of a business. You guys stuck together through it, and you know, kudos to both of you for that. That's amazing. One of the questions.
You know what it makes me think of, PJ? It makes me think of the Polites. We recently had an episode with you know some Dedrick remarkable people, Crystal. The successful television couple beyond some of the most successful television of the last. And I apologize, I don't remember the name of their show off the top of my head. I should, but they also spoke about, you know, how they helped each other through moments of challenge. Their respective personalities really helped them persevere. And likewise, they didn't really think about quitting. And that's, I don't find that, you said that might sound strange. It actually doesn't. It sounds to me very consistent with what we hear over and over again from guests on the show, which is that quitting is not an option. It doesn't mean you don't pivot, you don't change, you don't adjust, you don't learn. That's the very opposite. Actually, successful people are constantly evaluating, constantly rethinking, constantly strategizing, but they don't quit. Yeah. That's really it. I mean, generally speaking, everybody has the same experience. Those who don't succeed because they quit. I mean, that's been my experience. And I think that's a lot of what I'm hearing from you here. Let's we've talked about resilience, and I think that's important. But, you know, another component of entrepreneurship that gets attention, and appropriately so, is the long hours and the sacrifices. You get to work with your wife, so maybe that gives you the opportunity to, you know, blend business and pleasure a little bit. But talk to me about prioritizing time between growing your business, maintaining your health. You seem like you're a fit guy. Nurturing your personal life. What is, how are you finding balance there?
Well, I'll start off with just want to kind of frame a few things. First off, I'm not a fit guy. That's why I don't do the big horizontal body picture. We just do the shoulders up.
Very nice shoulders then. That's how
the only thing I like about fitness is fitness, carbless in my mouth, you know what I'm saying? as far as working with my wife, so she actually is a CFO for a local car dealership. She is my co-founder strategically. She's part of the conversation. We keep her in the loop. She does the things that she really loves, which is event planning for our team, Christmas party, stuff like that. So part of what's helped is I have this level balance, but she's not in the business because she's able to ask me. I'm just a firm believer in really those, I'll call them, I think a lot of people think of them as dumb questions, but they always like spur your thought in a different way, or they throw you off enough to make you think differently. And that's generally the conversation we're having because she's not involved every day. I will say that from an hours perspective, she has accepted as a significant other that I do not turn off. My kids have slightly accepted that I do not turn off. So I know there's these whole things about work-life balance. If you have a brain like me, that's impossible. So it is work-life integration. How do I integrate my life to work with my business. My kids know what carbless point of sale looks like. They'll call it out as soon as they see it in a store. My kids know how to merchandise a store shelf. I should say the 7-year-old, 3-year-old, not so much. Next week, I'm taking a friend of mine and his family in 2 weeks to a Brewer game where his kid is going to throw out the first pitch, because I could really care less about that. But it's something that I was offered. My dad was able to ride in an Indy car, something that was offered to me. I couldn't make it. So I was able to get him to do it as a double up. So I really just focus on all the opportunities that I end up getting by proxy of the brand. Like, how do I do that to help everybody else enjoy the hell out of their life?
That is awesome. Tal, I think you wanted to mention that the Polites were on the show 50-50 Flip, which is on Hulu and A&E.
Hulu and A&E, one of the top shows on television. They're an amazing couple.
Oh my God, they're so nice. They're so nice. So Speaking of nice couples, I also am lucky enough to work with my rock star wife. How did you and Amanda meet? And what is it like for you to be like, you know, building a business? I know she gets to do the event planning and whatnot, but like, how is that building a business with your life partner?
So how we met in 2014, if you remember earlier, I told you I left the Cheese Factory for a short period of time. She hired me to be a outside sales energy consultant. She was a VP for a small company in my tiny hometown. So I always like to say, since we got married, she's hired me twice. So that's how we met. We were actually both married when I started working there, and it, like, the relationship started probably three years later or so. As far as working with her, I think it is some of the things we're afforded, allowed, you know, it's, I can't put words to it, man. We get to do just things that are incredible. And it's, you know, I had a vision of my dream life 10, 15 years ago, and this is better than I envisioned it. There are no words.
Enough said.
Man.
It's a mic drop
moment.
There
are no words for that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I know, PJ, you're in the same place. PJ's wife is incredible and also a hugely successful novelist. And I know that he shares the same views about his relationship.
Oh, yeah, I'm just riding her coattails. She's badass.
So Adam, I'm gonna finish. PJ kind of took the light question on how you guys met, and I want to finish maybe with a question that's about the future. Where do you see Carbless? What do you envision? Obviously, your passion for your business is resonates, right? I don't know if you have a vision board or how you think forward and how much of it is we'll get there versus you have a plan, but 5 years from now, where's this business?
So something we didn't talk about too much, but there's, you know, scan data. And so there is a brand that, you know, for you, Tal and PJ, depending where you're at in Chicago, is probably the biggest brand. They're the biggest brand nationally for a vodka canned item. And we like to say they're the biggest brand where Carbless does not sell. And that's statistically and data accurate. So we're the top selling in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, North Dakota, South Dakota, any place that we're fully distributed. And so over the next 5 years, as we're compounding, and that company is owned by three billionaires, and, you know, kudos to them. They built an amazing brand. We didn't have the financial power to compete against them. And as we continue to compound and grow a profitable business, we're getting closer and closer. So the next 5 years, it's not being just a piecemeal number one RTD. It becomes number one RTD in the nation. And the best-selling spirit in the nation is Tito's. We're beating them in Minnesota. We're super close to beating them in Wisconsin. I think we're beating them in Iowa in sales. And so the coolest part about this, guys, is when we talked about getting it on the shelf, we're beating brands that have been around for, I mean, Tito's been about 25, 30 years. This other RTD is maybe 7 or 8, but we're beating brands in dollars. Jack Daniels, Jim Beam, they've been around 100, 150 years. And that I think is, you know, when you really put all of it together, to be beating brands like that in dollars. A bottle costs, you know, $35. They got to buy four packs for us to beat that in dollars. That's just incredible. And so I think it's scaling it to that point of being the number one. But also, we have had nobody quit our business ever. We've had to let a few people go because they weren't a fit. But if we wanted to keep them on, nobody's quit. And if we can continue to scale at that pace and have people stay energized, engaged at Carbless and love what they do, then I think we've done the brand justice and done it the right way.
Our guest today is Adam Croner. He's the co-founder of Carbless, and you can probably tell why they've done as well as they have. Then just voted earlier this year the number one fastest growing company by Inc's Regional Midwest. I know a thing or two about the alcohol industry. I'm obviously originally from it, and I congratulate you on what you've done so far. And I have no doubt that 5 years from now, you're going to achieve whatever it is you set your mind and heart to. So Adam, thank you so much for spending time with us today. We really appreciate it. Continued success to you and your family, and keep raving business.
Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap, folks. Like what you heard, want to support the show? Please follow our page on LinkedIn and Facebook. Visit us on YouTube, and please like and rate us on all of your favorite podcast streaming services. You can also see exclusive content, subscribe for free to our weekly blog, support our sponsors, and soon buy our merchandise at www.bravingbusiness.com. Thanks for being a part of our production, and we'll see you next time on the Braving Business Podcast.